You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, pesky auto repair. I hear these guys are good fellas.
Why are you here? What are you doing here?
Hey, my car's making a funny noise, and,
What do you mean, funny? I don't understand funny. What, like, I amuse you? Like, this is a funny place? Funny like a clown? What do you mean, funny? What?
What are you doing?
Tell me.
How much is this gonna cost me?
What do you mean, how much is it gonna cost you? What do you mean? What are you doing? Embarrass me in front of my mechanics? What's wrong with you? Get out of here. Leave the keys and get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of my shop right now. Get out of here. I'll get back with you.
When it comes to auto and truck repair, not everyone you deal with is a good fella. At Perfection Auto Works, we take car repair very seriously. From your brakes, belts, and hoses to funny noises under the hood. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Together, they brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guinea's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite, and Guinea's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out, Guinea's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guinea's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, and listened to weekend talk show in all of Arizona. Thank you for making that possible now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk. The following is a presentation of Perfection Auto Works, Tucson, Arizona, and originates from the archives of the John C. Scott Show from 50 years of Tucson broadcast history. The following interview was first aired 9/11/2007 and has been aired each 9/11 in Tucson, Arizona ever since. It is an interview with Jim Campbell, Tucson developer, home builder, and civic leader, as he tells of his escape from Tower 2, 9/11/2001. Here is his story. September the 11th attacks. This is the anniversary. A series of coordinated suicide attacks by Al-Qaeda upon the United States of America, September the 11th, 2001. On that morning, terrorists affiliated with Al-Qaeda hijacked four commercial passenger jetliners. The hijackers intentionally crashed two of the airliners into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York, killing everyone on board and many others working in the buildings. The death toll climbed over 3,000. The hijackers crashed a third airliner into the Pentagon. Fourth plane crashed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, after passengers and members of the flight crew on the fourth aircraft attempted to retake control of their plane, which was headed for Washington, D.C. There are no known survivors of any of the flights. Let's recall 9/11/2001. Jim Campbell of Oasis Construction and Development Company is in Tucson, but he was not here on 9/11/2001. Jim, welcome to our show this morning. Start with that morning of 9/11/2001 as the sun came up, and then follow it throughout the day, if you will.
Sure, John. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Actually, I'll start for the night before. On September 10th, I was living in San Francisco running a high-tech software company. Had boarded a plane to fly to New York City. I had a 8 o'clock meeting with Morgan Stanley, their SVP of marketing, who was based on the 64th floor of Tower 2. So got in the night before, had a restless night's sleep, which I normally do when I go from west to east, and woke up at 6:30, was staying at the Embassy Suites across the street from the World Trade Center. went across the street to the mall. The World Trade Center buildings, the North and South Towers, were on top of a mall. And so went into the mall, had a cup of coffee and a bagel, checked in. They had a pretty elaborate check-in procedure. They actually gave you an ID card. They took a picture in order for you to go into the building. And so I kind of watched people while I was waiting for my car. There was a group of workers there, construction workers. There were seven of them in their overalls, and they were going up to the 110th floor of Tower 1 that were checking in before me. Needless to say, they never made it out. I was talking to them as they were going up. I checked in, made my way to the 64th floor of Tower 2. We were meeting in a northeast corner conference room. Was escorted there and was there alone for about five minutes, looking north at the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, the Brooklyn Bridge. It's just an amazing view. Just, and considering that I was on the 64th floor of a 110th floor building, I could only imagine what the 110th floor looked like. The SVP of marketing for Morgan Stanley came in, and we began to meet. And roughly at 8:50, the meeting changed. Heard three distinct sounds. The first sound sounded like a jet engine, a turbine, wound out as high as it could go. It just kind of a whirling noise. And then the next second, we heard a crash. And then the second after that, you heard an explosion. So there was three distinct sounds. Got up, looked out the window, and we could see the west side of Tower 1. And there were about 15 windows broken with flickers of flame. And that was it. It didn't look that bad on that side of the tower. Little did we know what was happening on the north side. But the sky was also filled with 8.5 by 11 papers. It looked like a parade, just papers everywhere. Morgan Stanley had been through the attack on the World Trade Center in 93, and they had been trained that if anything happened in any tower to get out. And so as I was sitting there watching, the woman that I was meeting with was already running around the floor instructing everybody to go down and get out. And so I had a choice to make at that time, whether to watch, which I had a great seat for what was going on. But I chose to follow her, and we ended up going down the stairs. And some people have asked, you know, why didn't you take the elevator instead of the stairs? And it's just like a fire drill. So people are going down the stairs. People are laughing. They're joking. We got down to about the 30th floor, and that's when our building was hit. The building was punched one direction, and then it rocked back and forth for about 5 or 7 seconds. People fell down. The laughing and joking quickly stopped. At that point, I figured everything was okay. I had been in the earthquake in San Francisco in 89, and you know, when the building quits rocking, you're fine. So we began to go down a lot faster now, and got down to the plaza level. The plaza was, in essence, the roof of the mall, and the Port Authority people were guiding us down stairs and into the mall. And as we were at the plaza level, you could look out on the roof, and the roof was covered with debris, airplane debris. There was a large pile of, it looked like parts of a person. It was pretty traumatic at that point. People were definitely freaked. And you could smell gas. You could smell diesel, or I guess it was jet fuel, but you could smell it in the air. Got down to the mall level, and now the Port Authority people were just basically made a row instructing us to go out. Got outside the building, and now we were standing between a church and City Hall, looking straight up, people everywhere. the woman in front of me mentioned she was on the 44th floor of Tower 1, and she had watched the American Airlines jet fly in above her and hit her building. And that's the first that I had heard that there was an airplane. Sat there for about 10 minutes watching, and people began to jump. I watched the first person and decided at that point that I didn't want that in my head. So I turned around and started walking around City Hall. So everybody was looking at the towers, and I was walking kind of against their view, and I could tell from their faces whenever somebody would jump, which would happen about once every 90 seconds. Kept walking, did not turn around. Walked around City Hall, went into a store to get a Coke. Had just hiked down 64 floors, so I needed something to drink. And I put my cup in to get ice, and the whole building shook. And it wasn't like an earthquake. An earthquake rolls. This is a chaotic shaking, and the whole building shook, and that's when Tower 2 fell. Got out of the building, stood on the street corner again. Now, we were on the north side of the tower. The wind that day was going north to south, so we were about 3 to 4 blocks to the north, so we didn't get inundated with the dust that you've seen on the pictures. Continued to walk around. I was trying to make my way back to my hotel because I had my computer there that had 3 years worth of emails, or not 3 years, I'm sorry, 15 years worth of emails. Most of my friends, people that I had kept in touch with, were all on that computer. Went over to West End, which was the road that ran along the west side of the towers, and that was the staging for the firefighters. And you'd see a fire truck roll up, and the people would get out, and they'd hop in line. And these were kids. I mean, they seemed like kids to me. They were probably in their early 20s. And then you'd also see old men like me. You'd see people in their 40s, and the whole range, and they just hopped in line, and they were all just walking towards Tower 1, which was still standing. And it was just an amazing sight to see. Firefighters are just amazing people. Anyway, made it back to a hotel that night. Kind of saw the first pictures the next morning. It took me 5 days to get home. We were trapped in New York City for a couple days, and then 3 days to drive home. On the drive home, I'd wake up every morning and cry for about an hour and a half, just uncontrollable, just didn't know why or who or what. It was just there. And stopped at Notre Dame, sat in the cathedral for about 3 hours, and wrote down portions of what I experienced. Stopped at Wounded Knee, which was the massacre of Wounded Knee with the Indians, and they have a old religion called the Ghost Dance that in essence is a religion based on dreaming of the way things used to be. And so I sat there with a couple Indians at 8:30 in the morning and had a beer with them and talked about that. Well, and then made it home.
Excluding the 19 hijackers, 2,974 people died in the attack, another 24 missing, presumed dead. Overwhelming majority of the casualties, civilians, certainly including nationals of 90 different countries. In addition, the death of at least one person from lung disease ruled to be a part of the casualty list. You think of the 3,000 dead, you're alive. By the grace of God, I would assume, Jim, because you could have stayed and looked and said, well, there's a plane in the building next to me. I'll watch and see what happens now. Or you could have left behind the woman and gone down. You chose the latter and saved your life. I'm sure somewhere along the way you think of yourself as an individual of why I survived, why 3,000 others died, somewhere along the way. When you first found out it was an attack, not an accident, I mean, did you think that night as you went back to the hotel, or was the newspapers telling you, and the reporters' television and everybody else, this was an attack on America by terrorists? When did you first learn that?
Actually, on the way back, I stopped in the village and stopped at Barney Mac's, which was a bar there. They had two phones, which was the first way I could contact my wife and contact other people in my company. And so that's where I learned that they had two TVs on. And people were angry. The New Yorkers that were there were just downright angry. They just could not believe that this would happen. So that was the first I became aware of it.
Well, you had to be angry too, and sad, and I mean, I can't even imagine what you were thinking. And then the long road home gave you an opportunity over many, many miles to think about it and to replay it in your mind over and over again, because the television sets, no matter where you arrived on stops along the way, were playing it over and over again, and they still do. And I'm curious, it's something I'm sure you'll never get over with, but has it changed over the years after 7 years on these anniversaries when the world thinks about it? Do you think about it every day, or do you think about it every week, or do you think about it every month or on an anniversary? Well, how often does it come back to you?
It's a big part of me. I carry it with me. Every year I've done something different. On the 50-year anniversary, I teamed up with Roger Tampanetti from the Tucson Firefighters Unions, and we put the lights up on A Mountain. I've gone on long Jeep trips. I've written stories. I created a CD. This is the first time I've ever talked to people on the radio or anything else about it. So this is a different year as well. It's a big part. It made me conservative, kind of in a self-centered way. On the drive back, my sister is a Buddhist, and she told me that the Buddhist view was I had lived such a good life, they wanted me to continue. This is as I was trying to justify why I was still here. And my brother is a deacon in the Catholic Church, and he mentioned I had lived such a wretched life that they were going to give me a second chance. So, yeah. It's one of these things, it's a part of me. I think about it a lot. I think about it in a political way. You know, I'm thankful that we've been safe for the past 7 years. So, you know, I tend to be a supporter of what George Bush has done, though I know that's not a very popular view. But it's safe. I'm safe. And my family's safe. And that's pretty important.
The lessons, do you think, that were learned by this country, not only its government, but by its people, after this attack on American soil and these horrendous numbers of casualties and destruction, not only from the World Trade Centers, but the others on the Pentagon and what happened in Pennsylvania. Have we learned something, do you think? Or have we just accepted it and moved on, hoping that it won't happen again?
I'd say it's more the second. I think the American people have a very short memory. I think for the first, maybe even 5 years, we had a strong memory of it. But just like the earthquake in San Francisco, the day after, I had a cab driver stop at a four-way stop and wave me through. I'd never ever seen that happen in San Francisco, where a cabbie let somebody else go through. Things like that happen. It brings people together. I think September 11th, it brought people together. But I think it fades. And it's up to the 10,000 people that did get out, that were spared that day, to keep it alive.
It made you more conservative politically. What else did it do to change you? You change the way you think, change the way you act, change the way you react to people, family, friends, business acquaintances. You were spared. You're alive.
Yeah, the biggest thing, John, is on September 10th, I was the CEO of a software company working 75 hours a week in San Francisco. And over the next 90 days, I laid off half the company. I bought a house in Tucson. I resigned my position. I sold my house in San Francisco. I got the kids in school here. I hired a new CEO, and I moved. So I was basically made a major life decision every other week for 90 days. And now I'm a developer in Tucson. Some people would say that's a harder job. But I'm a developer in Tucson. I tend to have a more balanced life. I still tend to be a workaholic, but not near what I was. My kids and my wife are definitely much happier. It's different. I'm just in a completely different place than where I was on September 10th.
Any connection with those that were in Morgan Stanley at the office there at all? Any connection with those of you that survived? Did you know, talk to them or ever know of them or what happened to them?
Yeah, Sandy, who was the SVP of marketing, who I, in essence, credit with saving my life. I keep in touch with her every year. I will connect with her again tomorrow, or today, I should say. And, you know, she actually worked for another year, and then she took off. She took off for two years. She had a baby. She found herself. She spent some time with her family. And just recently, she went back to work on Wall Street again, part-time. So I keep in touch with her. Like I said, I feel like I owe her my life.
The official New York City observance of the anniversary of 9/11 taking place today, World Trade Center site. Names of the 2,751 victims read aloud for moments of silence will be observed, commemorating the times. Have you been back to that site?
I actually... when I resigned my position, I had to bring the new CEO out there, and so I went back fairly quickly, boarded another United 777, and went back there in October of 01 and walked the site. An interesting story is as I was walking up to the site, the first thing I saw, they had covered, you know, they had surrounded the site with a fence. And the first thing I saw was a bumper sticker, and it said, Tucson is with you. You've probably seen those bumper stickers,
sure.
But I had not seen one before. And so in October of 01, after my wife and I had made the decision to move back home, that's the first thing I saw that I when I went back. We walked around the whole site, read a lot of the notes. There was a note from a child to his father, basically saying, I miss you, and even if you're dead, I hope you're happy. I love you. And of course, I was a mess for the next 2 hours after that. And since then, I've been back three more times.
So. Jim, thank you for taking the time to say this. I think if there's any purpose we could serve today, would be to not only hear what you said, to remember the horrible tragedy, and to be angry again. I think anger is an incredibly appropriate response. To be thankful, I'm sure you are, to be alive. We all are thankful to be alive in light of the tremendous death toll, but also to remind each one of us that we must do everything we can as citizens to prevent this from happening again, and to have a sense of every day's precious and valuable. And you and I talked about this one time before, not certainly in any length at all or any depth at all. And there is some depth, some meaning to your life, perhaps, that wasn't there. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Jim, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
And thank you, John.
Jim Campbell, Oasis Development Company, a well-known builder here in Tucson, was there, 9/11, Tower 2. On that fateful day.
This interview has been a production of Perfection Auto Works from the archives of the John C. Scott Radio Show, 50 Years of History in Tucson, Arizona. I've interviewed thousands of people over a half century. This is one of the more compelling interviews I've ever done, one of the more emotional issues I've ever done. I got to know Jim Campbell. He's an incredible individual, an individual who was changed by 9/11. And for the better, he says. He's a remarkable, successful individual whose story resonates with all of us again and again every time I air this story. It is just a powerful interview that I wanted to share with you on this anniversary, 20 years after 9/11/2001. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Back in a moment.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Radio advertising busts through clutter and reaches your customers with immediacy.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Tell a creative story with intimacy and emotion to sell your products and services directly to your customer.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Your radio commercial puts you front and center in the listener's attention span.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Ackerly Advertising has over 5 decades of radio advertising experience. Stir emotion, create demand, and grow your business with radio.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Hi, my name is Jim Hanley. I was born and raised in Tucson, and I raised my own boys here. I want to get to know you, your dreams and goals, and help you shape them into a plan for success. I've been helping hundreds of Tucson families do this since 1993. It takes experience and know-how to navigate the rocky shoals of the financial markets and keep you on an even keel. I look at every account I manage every day to find opportunities to grow your nest egg, to make you at ease and enjoying your life. I want to show you the highest integrity and reliability you can find anywhere. That's why I named my business with my own name, Jim Hanley LLC, and why I'm a member of the CFA Society of Tucson. Find me at jimhanleyllc.com or call me at 623-3646. That's 623-3646. Jim Hanley LLC is a registered investment advisor and a member of FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Let's go to Los Angeles, California, and talk with Matt Klank, who is a GOP strategist, consultant, one of the more respected political observers in Southern California, a regular on KTLA Channel 5, which has millions of listeners in that city of angels. And let's talk about the recall effort that has wide-ranging ramifications in almost every corner of the United States. Here's Matt Klank. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you? Happy Saturday.
All right. Give me a history of this recall. How did it begin? Where is it now? And what's at stake on Tuesday?
So it began a while ago. We have a very progressive state constitution. And the Hiram Johnson in the 1930s set up a system where anyone, if you get a requisite number of signatures, can be recalled. And it has been used, or it's been attempted a lot, but it has been used sparingly because it's pretty difficult to get everything put in place. As your listeners are probably aware, Gray Davis was recalled in 2003 when Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was the big name on the ballot. So this year, or last year with COVID, the time to gather signatures was extended. Ultimately, the requisite number was met, and then a campaign has ensued. Next week on the 14th, Californians go to the polls, but the election will end, and we'll figure out if Governor Newsom is recalled, and if the majority says yes, then a plurality, whoever gets the most votes, will determine who our next governor is.
But how many names on that ballot? Good Lord, it's hundreds, isn't it?
It's crazy. Yeah, there are 2.5 pages of names. They're not in alphabetical order. It's hard to find anybody. And unlike 2003, there is really no one notable on the ballot. The one who's probably gained the most notoriety is Larry Elder. And he was actually a blessing in disguise for Governor Newsom because he gave the governor someone to actually run against. And the Democrats have pulled out the big guns. You had Kamala Harris in town last week. You'll have Joe Biden in Southern California with Gavin Newsom on Monday. Barack Obama has done television ads. And if you look at the numbers right now, Gavin Newsom is going to overwhelmingly defeat the first question and will actually exit the recall in a stronger position than he will than he would have if nothing had been done.
So you don't think it'll even go to the second part of the ballot where you choose somebody? This will be, no, we do not want this recall, and that's it, right?
Correct. It's not going to matter. The number, you know, we're at about 33% voter participation, which for a recall election is really high. And the Democratic base got motivated. And surprisingly, the Republican base is really not, and their votes are divided. So Gavin Newsom has run a pretty decent campaign. He positioned this as the, you know, fighting the Trump recall, which, you know, in Southern California, or frankly in California itself, Donald Trump is overwhelmingly unpopular. And in spite of the fact that Governor Newsom has not been a very good governor, he is going to come out of this looking really, really good, and he reinserts himself into the 2024 presidential conversation.
What the hell was he? Were they all angry because he wanted you to wear a mask or get vaccinated? Was that the whole deal? And, you know, people said, you can't tell me what the hell to do. We'll recall you. What's this all about? I mean, what the hell did he do?
You know, John, California is a state of contrast. We're the fifth largest economy in the world, but we have the most welfare recipients. We've got the highest homeless population. We've got the highest taxes. We've got the highest gas taxes. We've got, you know, if you go to San Francisco or L.A., it looks in some parts of those cities like you're driving in a third world country. We've got an ongoing drought. We've got massive forest fires, and the governor actually lied about the number of forest fires that he had, you know, the work that he had done to prevent those forest fires. Couple that with schools being closed, and when they are open, children are not being educated to grade level, and the majority can't read or do math at grade level. California's got some big problems, and Governor Newsom has not been very responsive to those needs.
His appeal, however, to fend off the recall was, if you don't turn back the recall, people will die. I like put it on a bumper sticker. If you don't elect me, you're going to be dead, or somebody you know will be dead. He actually said that. There's going to be a lot of people dead if you don't keep me in office. I haven't heard that before. I've heard a lot of politicians saying, boy, this is going to be a bad situation if I'm not elected, but you're going to die if I'm not? Really? Seriously.
Well, I mean,
love California.
It's what he needed to do to break through the clutter. And believe it or not, he has run a pretty decent campaign. You know, the Democrats finally woke up and realized that there was an election, and Democrats outnumber Republicans by 2-1 in terms of registration. And I mean, look, let's face it, the Republicans have not put a very viable set of candidates forward for quite some time at any statewide level. There's a reason why the Democrats have super majorities in the legislature and have held every statewide constitutional office for at least a decade.
What's the turnout going to be in this recall effort? What do you predict for a turnout?
Probably about 37%, which is pretty solid. You know, that's in every 22 million voters were mailed absentee ballots. The Democrats are overwhelmingly turning in their ballots, actually at a higher percentage to their share of vote. And Republicans will likely vote late because of the distrust of absentee ballots. But that's new. I mean, our state has a history of absentee ballot usage that is strong and effective. So, the Democrats did exactly what they need to do to win this campaign. And Governor Newsom is going to come out of this. You know, he has some flaws, but he's going to come out of this in a much, much better place and looking like a very, very strong progressive alternative to the governors that we've seen, you know, Governor Abbott in Texas, Governor DeSantis in Florida, who are taking their lumps right now, but they've looked pretty good over the last 6 to 8 months.
Well, I guess he could have another bumper sticker. What
does not kill me makes me stronger, or something like that.
Exactly. You know what? You're exactly right. They should listen to you, John.
Matt, I get mail all the time. People email me and whatever. They write mails to me. People say, you know that guy from L.A.? You know, the guy's on Channel 5. I've seen him on Channel. How long have you been a commentator on Channel 5, which is one of the most watched television stations in America, by the way, by the millions? You've been with them how long?
I've probably been doing it off and on for 10 to 15 years.
Really?
Well, you know, I love doing it. It's fun because, you know, I used to do CNN and Fox regularly, and they set you up to argue. They want left and right, and they want the battle. And Channel 5 is great because they always say, just tell us what's happening, tell us why it's important, which is more fun for me because I love politics. It's in my blood. I live it every day. And I'm fascinated why people, you know, why the electeds do what they do and say what they say, and then how that ultimately influences voters when they go to the voting booths. So it's really fun, and I'm happy that they call on me to do it, and I always appreciate the feedback that I get. I should say most always. Every once in a while, I get someone who will send me something, and they're like, I never looked at it that way before.
Right. Matt Klink, good to talk with you. We appreciate you being on the show. Have a great weekend. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, John. Have a good one as well.
Bye-bye. All right, thank you. Matt Klink, a GOP strategist, GOP consultant, and a prognosticator of politics on Channel 5 KTLA, Los Angeles, predicting Gavin Newsom will win overwhelmingly in the recall effort against him and become more stronger because the recall did not kill him. Politically speaking, of course. Jim Hanley, my financial guru, next. Treasury chief warns U.S. may hit the debt limit in October. That's not good. In fact, that's bad. How bad is it? We'll talk with Jim Hanley after these messages from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum.
Do you want election integrity and transparency? Are you one of those Americans who is sick and tired of the political duopoly? Do you wish there were another viable choice? Do you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours? Do you question the political theater you're fed every day? What do you believe, the approved narrative or your own eyes?
Are you ready to become engaged for freedom no matter your political party preference? Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Are you tired of being lumped into the worst elements of history when you exercise your right to speak, dissent, or petition your government? Are you perplexed by those who cannot distinguish between speech and violence? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Radio advertising busts through clutter and reaches your customers with immediacy.
Contact Accurately Advertising.
Tell a creative story with intimacy and emotion to sell your products and services directly to your customer.
Contact Accurately Advertising.
With a cost-effective campaign, you can reach your customer over and over.
Contact Accurately Advertising.
Accurately Advertising has over 5 decades of radio advertising experience. Create demand and grow your business with radio.
Contact Accurately Advertising.
Now, 2 great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Janet Yellen is the Treasury Secretary of the United States. She's been using what she says is a law that is extreme and is offering extraordinary measures which could cover a variety of bookkeeping maneuvers just to keep us above our heads out of the debt of America.
She says all available measures and cash on hand, if fully exhausted, soon the United States of America would be unable to meet its obligations for the first time in our history. Well, how serious is this? Let's go to one of the smartest financial people I know, Jim Hanley. Hi, Jim. This whole situation with the debt limit is really serious business, isn't it?
It is, John. It should not be minimized. If the United States defaults on its interest payments, it will have a downgrading of its credit rating. That will be bad for bond sales going forward. So it's, I would say that in the short run, it's very important that we raise it. And as I recollect, the debt ceiling is currently at $28.1 trillion. That's the national debt. And that ceiling was set at the end of July. I think Congress, in bipartisan agreement, agreed to let the debt ceiling float until the end of July. And as that date approached, Janet Yellen became increasingly concerned that it was going to set, at that $28.1 trillion level. But there was not support from the Republican side in particular for extending it or raising the debt ceiling, after that point. And so there is a crisis brewing. If the federal government cannot cast a budget for fiscal year 22, that expires at the end of June next year, or maybe it's in the fall. Yeah, I guess it's September 30th of next year. Then the federal government won't have money to pay the people that work for it. So we've seen this happen before. I don't know, it was 5 years, 8 years ago when there was a crisis and paychecks didn't go out, for a month. But we certainly don't want that to happen. On the other hand, we've got to stop this borrowing. I was looking at Zach's professional advisor service that I subscribe to, and they said this week that we are awash in liquidity. Now, when financial people talk about liquidity, what they're talking about is cash. And we talked about that in an earlier show, how the M1 has skyrocketed due to the asset purchase program that the Federal Reserve has been engaged in for quite some time, buying $120 billion in bonds every month. And so if the listeners remember, if the Federal Reserve is buying these bonds, they have to pay for them. And what they pay for them with is new money. They make it up. They create it. The banks put that money on their balance sheet in exchange for the bonds that the Federal Reserve has taken off of their balance sheet. So in this purchase. So what we see is, as a result of this debt monetization, as it's called, is the velocity of money is plummeting. You can look at that figure at the Fred, the St. Louis Fed, statistical tables, and see that it's gone from like 10 times per quarter that a dollar has been transacted to less than two times. And I think that when you have a very, very low velocity of money, what you have is this stagnation of cash, not moving. And I think there is a significant risk for hyperinflation, for a sudden debasing of the currency, as they...
Well, you're pretty pessimistic, Jim, aren't you?
I am, John. I would say that I'm between being very concerned and frightened, you know, about this situation, because I don't think that there is the congressional will to do what it needs to be done.
And that is to raise some money from some people who have a great deal of it. That's really one of the ways to get out of this without a tremendous burden on the vast majority of Americans. You've said that all along,
right,
haven't you?
You're right, John. The top 10% in this country own 69.8% of the wealth. The top 1% in the country own 32.1% of the wealth. And there was a study that was released last week by Assistant Treasury Secretary Natasha Sarin, in which she points out that the IRS loses $600 billion a year in revenue due to tax cheats. The 1% are the biggest cheats of all. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, don't want to cast aspersions against Jeff Bezos and, you know, those guys, but 36% of the unpaid taxes they account for. That's $168 billion a year that they skate on, that they don't pay. And so there is a solution. She is offering a solution to this this problem, which is primarily due to the fact that the IRS has lost 15,000 enforcement personnel since 2010. That has been by design. So if you don't have auditors working for the IRS, audits are not going to be conducted and people are not going to be caught. And so they'll continue to be able to cheat on their taxes. So we don't even really need to, well, we do need to raise the tax rate. We cannot go along with a 21% corporate tax rate. It's way too low. We're in the bottom third, it looks like to me, you know, globally at that tax rate. But we have to start recovering some of this lost revenue. It is causing a financial crisis here.
But Jim, I've never heard you as negative and pessimistic, but I think actually being warned about the potential downfall of the dollar and such is something we all better start paying attention to. We're out of time for this weekend. We're going to talk more about this next week. Want people to call you 623-3646 if they have questions. I know you help people protect their investments and help them actually profit from them as well. I don't know a money person that's smarter than you, better than you, more honest than you, and I just am so proud to have you as part of my show. And we'll be back next week, Jim. I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for the kind words, John, and it's always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Jim Hanley, 623-3646, or go to jimhanleylc.com, LLC.com. And there's a lot online that you need to know about Jim Hanley. 623-3646. Call and talk to him. Thanks for being with us from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. We want to remember 9/11 today and every day. We have to remember. We shall never forget. Thanks to Jim Campbell and his interview repeated now for the 15th year. KVY The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum, the most talked to, talked about, and listened to talk show weekends in all of Arizona, now in our 32nd year of continuous political talk. Very quickly, a personal note. I have a PT Cruiser. I love this little car. It takes me everywhere I need to go. Air conditioner goes out. Temperature gauge climbs to we're all going to die. I call AAA. They rush the car to Perfection Auto Works Wednesday. Get a call on Thursday. Mike Emery says, your car's ready. I went, really? He says, yes. I said, the cost? He said, it's the estimate. Just what we told you. Didn't have time to detail the car because we wanted to get it back to you as quickly as possible. That's service. I mean, who does that? What auto repair place does that? That's why we're so proud to have Perfection Auto Works as our prime sponsor.
Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.